All right, it's March 19th, and it's the Tried and True Podcast. I'm your host, Clay, with my brother, Mitch, here, and we're going to dive into some season preview stuff. So we're excited to do this pod because it's a long time coming. The Mariners lineup seems all but finalized. The rotation feels finalized. So we'll give you our picks for some breakout players, maybe some dark horses you're not thinking of that you should pay attention to, our rotation review on what that rotation might look like and how good it may be. We're going to give an opening day preview as well. So let's get into it. Let's start with some rotation and lineup reviews. It's pretty easy to get into those. But Mitch, first off, how are we feeling? How are we doing? It's been a week since we recorded a pod. It feels like we're getting in the groove of things again. How are you feeling?
Dude, the lineup looks phenomenal. I know people don't care about spring training and you shouldn't care about it too much, but I don't know how you can not watch Dom Canzone crush, Mitch Haniger crush, Jorge Polanco crush.
Yeah.
It's a good time to be a Mariners fan that wanted to see some upgrades in the hitting department when we already have a phenomenal pitching staff, and that's exactly what we saw. I'm feeling really good about it.
Yeah, 100%. The people who are not feeling good are the unpaid interns, unfortunately, with the Seattle Mariners. And so, you know, that all jokes aside, the funniest thing that we saw this week, and actually literally as we're recording, blowing up on Twitter, is just the fact that a podcast, we won't name names because I'm sure that this is
they had to apologize because they indicated that the Mariners maybe didn't pay their interns. The Mariners very much do have paid interns, by the way.
Is the bad man in the room with you? Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like so this whole scenario is so Mariners. Dude, because it's like such a non-story.
I'm pretty sure
a Locked On gets a lot of views on YouTube, whatever, but at the end of the day it was probably just a throwaway line from Colby.
It was probably some joke about innocuous.
We've probably said worse, and not on purpose, but just like as jokes. Like
I think what's cool is, you know, at least for Locked On, they know DePoto's watching. Like, someone up there is like, all right, these guys have to issue an apology. That was absurd. Like, that's neat.
I'm just thinking of, like, Goldie or somebody who caught it and is, like, so upset about it.
That is not a Goldie thing, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm just like imagining Dave Sims like just furious in his hotel room.
one of the announcers is what you're saying. Yeah, is going straight to the top. Like,
I'm just trying to think of the funniest person who would be upset about hearing about unpaid interns, and it's Goldie or Sims, to be honest. Like, I'm just furious. Like Arthur shaking his fist, being like, "Dude, we pay our interns." Like,
dude,
no dog.
Dave Niehaus is rolling in his grave right now. He is
never live. He would never live for this.
True. Yeah. Just pretty funny stuff, but how are you feeling about the lineup?
Yeah, I feel good. I feel better watching spring training, and that feels so weird to say, but you really can see it come together. Like, you can see Polanco putting balls in play. You can see Garver. You can see Garver hitting runs in. You can see Haniger healthy and how explosive he can be. Although, like, I posted this on Twitter, he's literally hitting these home runs off of certified janitors. But like,
don't
that
care.
Is,
yeah, still
don't
love it,
care, dude. Like, I do not care at all. It's one of the cooler things that, you know, we see, like, just how much we don't care about like wins in spring training. Like, I know people equally don't care about performance in spring training, but like, it is either encouraging or discouraging to see, you know, like a lot has been made about a certain Brave who was a former Mariner that is struggling, Jared Kelnick. And, you know, just as we're like kind of laughing at that, like, it's a nothing burger, just as, you know, Haniger hitting four home runs, spring training, he looks like an MVP candidate, you know.
I would say it's it's a little multifaceted. So you have statistics with like, okay, so Logan Gilbert is getting shelled. George Kirby is getting shelled.
Yes.
Who cares? We know they're going to be good in the middle of the season. But at the same time, you have a huge difference between Mitch Haniger crushing, Jared Kelenic not doing so hot. Not only that, like, not really much, but you have Mitch Haniger talking about kind of clubhouse leadership, and then you have right. Jared Kelenic throwing his helmet down after he strikes out in an at-bat.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a few things going on here that I think are a little more important than the spring training stats.
I'll give you a really simple flowchart of how I view the spring training. Option A, player does good, we're going to the World Series.
Right.
Option B, players do bad, spring training doesn't matter. And
exactly.
That is the end.
Yes.
And that is the end of my flowchart. And so
100%,
if you guys don't follow that methodology, you're lame and you make spring training really hard and really annoying, because if players are doing bad and the team sucks and we win zero games in spring training, it's a nothing burger. But
exactly.
If all the lineup is hitting 400 plus and Haniger hits four home runs, we're clearly going to win 95 games. So like, I just don't see how other people don't see
it. You might
as
well put us against the Dodgers right now. We're ready.
Yeah, and honestly, Yamamoto got touched up by the Mariners in spring training. So correlation, clearly.
Game one goes to us.
Clearly, advantage us. Yeah, we're up 1-0. So the Dodgers are already trying to claw back, and we've already stolen a game at home in LA. So they have to come up to Seattle at least even 1-1. Which is great.
Exactly. Yeah.
In all seriousness, the spring training there's been just a lot to be said about how fun the players look like they're having. Like, genuinely, it looks like this lineup is probably the deepest lineup. If you're having Ty France and Haniger legitimately at like 6, 7, 8 spots, like, that's just so good for your team in general. Them hitting it, not to say like when they were at their peak hitting 2, 3, 4, it was not good, but I think that it just goes to show you, like, if Julio can take that next step and really be like a perennial all-star type in the top MVP voting type player with a team as deep as this, like, this is exactly what we've been asking for. And it gives a lot of opportunities for us to win a lot of games.
And don't forget that Haniger isn't that far removed from a pretty good 2022. Not only that, but like the season the Mariners go to the playoffs. Like,
right.
Haniger's a part of that, whether you think he was
a big deal
or not.
Haniger was not just a big part of it. He literally was like the only reason why we were very, very close at making the playoffs the year before. Right. So like,
right. Yeah. 2021, he was huge. Yeah,
him driving in that run was literally like brought it down to game 162. So,
yeah,
you know, it matters a lot.
I know if we're talking like dark horse picks or if we're talking players to look for during the season, I know a lot of people have their eye on Dom Canzone just because he's an interesting dude. He has so much power. It's insane. He reminds me a little bit of like a mentally stable Kelenic, which is really,
honestly, he has a little bit more swag too. Like,
dude Dom Canzone swag is top tier. I
like
will
his swag is what you want Kelenic swag to be, but it's just
100%.
Not. But like, also, you're right. His mentals, like, he'll strike out 4 times a game, and like, you will never notice the difference. But like, Kelenic strikes out 2 times in a row, and you might have a hole punched in your dugout. So,
dude,
like,
right?
Who knows?
Yeah,
there's a big difference
kicked,
there.
Like,
I think what also we've hinted at for a long time is like, this stuff legitimately matters when you're talking about building a championship team. And I like Jared Kelenic a lot, and I don't mean to like make this about him. And the title of this podcast might have to be Jared Kelenic Who, but I think that like, there's a lot to be said about the vibes in the clubhouse, like Julio, and keeping some of these guys light. I think that Gino did a lot of that last year and against a lot of things that were happening in the clubhouse, but this team doesn't really have that like cancer sort of guy that could potentially like be bad vibes in the lineup and be like, damn, like that's the guy you don't want to be around, you know, whenever they strike out. And so
I think they went about it the right way. I think the culture is already kind of built. Like they definitely have a certain kind of culture with the Mariners. That's just it's good vibes only, baby. Like they're there for a good time and to play some good baseball. But this offseason, getting Mitch Haniger, you now have what I would consider pretty darn good leadership in the clubhouse as well, which I don't know if Gino was providing that or if he was just kind of like the good vibes guy, but Mitch Haniger is very clearly that, and he's going to be my dark horse pick for the year for sure.
I think that if he can stay healthy, and this is going to be a pretense to pretty much every conversation you have with Haniger, but like genuinely, if he stays healthy, he looks great, man. Like he hasn't played a lot of games in the last 3 years. But sometimes that plays into your advantage. Like as weird as that sounds, like not having as many miles on you. And if you can stay healthy in that like get right year, you see a lot of guys bounce back, you know? So like
dude's
if you can
straight
play
up
it,
bad.
Yeah, like if he can play a lot of games, like he can put together a pretty good season. And honestly, if he does it this year, he's gonna get paid a pretty good amount again. Even though the Giants like gave him a fat salary for the last 2 years, so I think that it will be interesting to see what Haniger does this year. But I'm just hoping he stays healthy. Just like if you're rooting for a player this year as a dark horse, it has to be Mitch Haniger. Like it just has to be.
I'm looking at like a 30 home run season. Like this guy, if he is not getting like plunked in the nuts with a baseball, he is smashing the baseball for 145 games. Like I would kill for Mitch Haniger to play at least 120 next year. Like it would just,
I was gonna say, if he plays, we have a shot at the division. Like that's just that's the reality. Like if he plays 130, like we are a different team. Like I actually randomly tweeted this out today, but like his like ceiling, or like the team's ceiling, it is very much dictated by his health. And there's obviously a bunch of other factors. There's 25 guys on the roster, but like his ceiling when healthy is really, really high. And so he makes the team that much better. And it kind of folds into my dark horse, which is actually Ty France. I think that Ty France
is a
guy that everybody's kind of just down on in general, right? Like he did not have a good year pretty much all of 2023, never got right. He went through streaks of, you know, being okay, but he was never great. But he didn't end up with a horrific batting average or anything like that. I think everybody was just surprised at his power really going away for the most part of last season, and his OPS struggling super hard. And so I think already we're seeing in spring training, there's a new look Ty France. He looks a lot healthier. He looks a little slimmer. He's moving a bit better. People are joking about his speed, but honestly, he does look faster. And so I can see Ty France being a great 7-8 hitter where you kind of set the table for flipping the lineup, right? So if Ty France gets on, gets plunked, does whatever, and then you have like a Rojas or Canzone type in that in that nine spot, all of a sudden you flip the lineup over to JP, Julio, and Polanco with runners on base, and you're cooking with gas at that point. Like we watched the Mariners today put a seven spot on a team in an inning because of that exact thing. Like Ty France got on base, Polanco made some noise, and then all of a sudden you see Urias and other guys start to contribute. And like this lineup top to bottom, like they can put a 10 spot on you pretty damn quick, to be honest. Yeah. Like this team like could do that. So I'm very, very excited about the prospect of both Haniger and Ty France playing really well.
Yeah, to expand on that a little bit, we have talked about this before, but Brant Brown now joining the squad as a sort of mid-game strategy kind of guy. I think if you're looking at the Mariners last year, they were a strikeout-heavy team, but it's not like you were given strikeout-heavy players that just became incredibly strikeout-heavy. It's that you were given like players that were doing okay into probably the worst seeing batters in the game as a team. And with Brant Brown, I'm hoping some of that is a little bit better this year. I'm actually hoping for like much more than a little bit better. I would like to see huge improvements in the way they see the ball.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that there's something to be said about consistency in the lineup. And I think Brant Brown is going to give the Mariners confidence to potentially run out a similar lineup on any given night, right? Like, yes, there's going to be differences in righty lefties. There's going to be some matchups that we like to take advantage of. But at the same time, I think it's a mark of a really insecure manager and potentially front office when you see as many lineup cards and differentiations as we saw last season. And I think it takes some real confidence to go out there and be like, we're going to run it back, even though, you know, we potentially lost last night or we didn't score any runs last night, but we're running out the same lineup because we trust our guys. And I think that last year we just pressed the panic button far too early, especially early in series, where it was like we lost the first game of the series or potentially first two, and all of a sudden you saw a completely different lineup. And that's not to say you can't tinker. Like, tinkering with lineups, we literally found that JP was a great leadoff hitter by tinkering with lineups. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, running out 120 different lineups in a season is not something that is really conducive to, let's say, making a playoff run. Like, you don't see the Dodgers or the Cardinals or the Phillies run out a different lineup every night, right? Like, they get guys comfortable where they're at. They have confidence with the guys in key areas and key spots, and they're good defensively. And so I'm really looking for Brant Brown to give that confidence to the Mariners to say, hey, we can look at analytics, we can look at different lineups, but we like our guys, and let's just run this out and see what happens. So,
yeah, I think there's two parts to that. So with hitters seeing a little bit more throughout the game, it'd be interesting to see how well they do later into the game, because it felt like, you know, seventh, eighth inning rolls around, you're starting to pull some of the 7, 8, 9 spot guys in pinch hitting or just completely like substituting. So I'd be interested to see what that looks like this year. And then another thing is, I think you can either view it as lack of confidence in your lineup, which I think it was probably like 50% lack of confidence in your later end of the lineup guys. And then also, they had a lot of confidence in their, in like the Demos, the Haggerty's, the Caballeros. So Caballero first half, not second half, but I think you can kind of do the same thing this year, but you have a lot more confidence in who you're starting the game with. Like, Polanco is a mainstay. Like, you're not swapping Demo around, trying to figure out what to do with the infield with Caballero, Demo, because Wong is imploding. Or, I think it's just going to be a little bit different. You have less platooning this year, maybe. It just depends on who stays healthy and who gets hurt and stuff like that. But I still have a lot of confidence in the bench to platoon a lineup together if we have to do it again. I would rather not, though. Like, that's just, it's sad to see.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think that we wanted to do a, you know, a pick for a breakout. And I think we did that. And then we kind of tied that into a dark horse this year. But I think that a true dark horse that I have kind of in my back pocket, honorable mention here, since mine was already Ty France. And I don't think they're going to make the opening day lineup, but I truly think they're going to contribute at some point and contribute a lot to the team, hopefully in a playoff run. Samad Taylor. I love that.
Ooh, interesting.
I genuinely think he is a disruptor on the base paths. I think that he just adds a little bit of, he's punchy. Like, you just see it in his game. Like, he can, if you give him a couple of at bats and put him in good situations and good matchups, he can add a little bit of value, and he's great in the field. He adds defensive value. And so I think that Samad Taylor is another guy I would love. He's just a spark plug, man. Like, you can just see he's a catalyst. And him alongside, like, him hitting 9 and flipping a lineup and seeing him on the base paths while JP and Julio and Polanco go up to bat would be fun as hell. So, like, I just...
So chaotic.
I love that style of lineup. And I think that the Mariners for a long time were really unathletic and did not commit to having a good base running team, I think that is completely overhauled this year. I think mm-hmm. that you have a ton of burners on the base paths, and you have a ton of guys that can make some noise. I mean, I'm just thinking back to the Cano and Cruz and those days, like Haniger was on
first
that team.
Two names that popped into my head when you said unathletic, I think.
It wasn't even unathletic. It was just like the lack of effort on the base paths was just like staggering, man. Like
Robinson Cano could be described by lack of effort. That should be like the
problem
encyclopedia.
He was just so damn good that it didn't really matter if he didn't give any fucks at any given moment. Yeah, like he could still be the best player on the field. And that was the most nauseating problem that we had. And for a Mariners team that needed some like real effort and looked to Cano as a leader, I don't think mm-hmm. Not showing effort was like the best thing that we could have had. But yeah, I think that I love this roster right now, to be honest. Like, I didn't think I'd like it as much as I do. I think that adding Garver and Rayleigh and Polanco mm-hmm. really adds some pop to the lineup, and now having Samad Taylor and a potential Haggerty, Trammell, Demo type mix there, all of a sudden you've got like some problems on the base paths if you're a pitcher that you're gonna have to deal with. Although I think Taylor Trammell might be the next Ryan Divish tweet that we get here in the next couple of days, but
dude, we'll yeah, that's,
I think he's out of options if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pretty sure Trammell is gone. I don't know.
Sucks, dude. He's such a good guy. Like, you can tell any interview that you listen to, he's like such a cool dude.
I've always wanted Trammell to be good, and if he's able to go somewhere else and play well, I'd love for that too. But yeah, looking at Samad Taylor, Ryan Bliss, and
I didn't even mention Ryan Bliss, but if somebody put Ryan Bliss on their dark horse
place
picks, I'd be like, I totally get it. Like, if at any time an infielder goes down, whether it's Rojas, Urias, we have a Polanco issue, like Ryan Bliss is right
there.
You're
not that worried about it. Like, you're like, well, I mean, let's see what Ryan Bliss can do.
And Demo, Demo has played some really important innings for the Seattle Mariners. Like,
it's
genuinely important innings.
Yeah, it's really funny that we were the Swaggerty fan club for so long, because I mean we do love Swaggerty, love the guy.
I mean, his 2022 campaign was just so outrageous that
it was
hard
crazy
not to be a Haggerty fan. Like, he literally, I think it was against righties. He was literally hitting like 340 something.
Dude, he
at
was
one
crushing.
Point. And I could not believe my eyes. Like, he literally worked himself into a everyday player for like a 3 week stretch. So, of course,
Haggerty,
big fans.
Yep. Big fan of Haggerty. But like, Demo is kind of another unsung, just like really solid depth player. Like, you cannot find players like Demo anymore. Like, so tough to find people that can play every position, at least. I'll take below average, actually, if he can play every position and still hit decently well, just get plugged in the lineup at any time and be okay. Like, yeah, I'll take that all day. But what we were saying before with, like, Ryan Bliss, Jonathan Glace, and Samad Taylor, all three are going to be in AAA next year. And
dude, I'm telling you, if you live in the Tacoma area or just the Pacific Northwest, the Tacoma Rainiers are going to be the best, cheapest ticket of all time. Like, seeing Tyler Locklear and Ryan Bliss and Samad Taylor, like,
Locklear too,
like, and potentially Hancock as like your opening day starter, and guys like that. I mean, I cannot tell you another AAA team that is as stacked as the one that we have in Tacoma. So, yeah, if you live in the area, if you don't want to, if you're priced out of a Mariners game or just don't want to go to a Mariners game and make the trip, the Tacoma Rainiers games are going to be absolutely awesome. The bang for your buck
100%.
Is going to be insane. I mean, probably 7 of the 9 starters on that team are probably going to make an MLB appearance, whether it's this year or next year. And that alone is outrageous. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think that the minor leagues this year, pretty much every affiliate to the Mariners is just a fun, like, watch when you look at the lineup. I mean, I think that I think that Harry Ford and Cole Young are going to start in Double A this year. So, mm-hmm. you know, going to watch them play together, super fun. And of course, we still got some arms that are coming up. So we'll see.
I saw Gabby Gonzalez, Harry Ford, and Cole Young in Double A last year at one of the fucking Indians games. It was awesome.
So sick, dude. I love
but
that.
But don't forget, by the way, everyone was glued to their screens watching highlight after highlight of Mike Ford hitting like crazy numbers in AAA last year. We were begging, pleading for DePoto to bring
in
him
our
up.
Defense. Mike Ford like legitimately won us some games last year.
The dude still had an 800 OPS. Like we really shouldn't forget.
He wasn't like a bum when they brought him up.
No.
Like, I mean, I get why you would probably be down on Mike Ford defensively, and he's pretty much one dimensional. But I totally think that I just am remembering the Baltimore series where mm-hmm. he hit three bombs in that series and two in one game. And I was like, this guy might save our season. This is the most outrageous storyline I've heard in a long time. Like barring like Sean.
That shit was so funny.
Like O'Malley, not Sean O'Malley, but O'Malley hitting that home run on Griffey's retirement day. Like that was like what Mike Ford was doing at that given time. It was crazy.
I think like for nothing else, like you got to love the guy for the memes. Mike Ford was just he was such an interesting dude in the lineup.
Is Mike Ford going to make?
I don't know if he's making any team. I don't know where he is, to be honest. I don't know what he's doing, but
well, I knew he was on Cincinnati.
Oh, is he?
I love this. He's playing his way into the Cincinnati Reds.
Yes, dude.
He's hitting. He's in the spring training. He's got six RBIs, a bomb. Dude.
Ford tough, baby.
11 hits. OPS.
God, I fucking love Mike Ford.
OPS of 982. Yummy. Damn. Mike Ford is damn near going to be a Cincinnati Reds starter. That's crazy.
Dude, can you imagine?
Obviously, spring training doesn't matter. But good for Mike Ford. He's just an absolute... home run and donut merchant at the same time. Love it. All right.
Yeah,
moving
on a little bit. We've talked a little bit about the lineup. I don't know if we've talked about the pitching rotation much, just because nothing else needs to be said. They're going to be fucking awesome. Like, you're scared
it's hard to bullpen a little bit,
but...
it's like, we could probably talk about the rotation ad nauseum. I think that everybody kind of understands that we have a top five rotation, pretty clear cut, and we damn near have a top three rotation behind some of the elite starters in the MLB. That's, you know, behind a potential, like, Dodgers starting rotation with all of their new guys. But I think that in any one that you're excited about, like in particular, like I feel like everybody talks about the rotation so much that you almost get fatigue about how good they are.
Right.
But like it truly is like one of those things where I feel lucky to have five guys that any day of the week, like I remember a time where it came to the fourth, fifth starting in Mariners rotation.
There was
like no chance to win a game.
One, maybe two at a time that you would go, we could maybe win this game. And even then, we'd still lose 1-0.
But it was it wasn't even a bullpen day. It was like a AAA, bring up a AAA guy day and burn one of their options. It was crazy. So I'm excited for this year. Like, we 100%. Legitimately have a rotation in depth too. Like, I know a lot of people were like, oh, you know, trade away Miller and Wu and we still have depth. Like, I like that we didn't trade away Brian Wu and Bryce Miller, because now we have this is what's called real depth, because now Hancock is down there. We have a couple of other AAA guys that are, you know, MLB ready. So I genuinely think that, like, you need six, seven guys. It's unreal to hear, or very rare to hear, that all five of your rotation guys pitch the whole season. So it's one of those things that I'm glad that we didn't trade any away. Like, why would you hurt your strongest unit?
Yeah, I think the the trade one sign Snell was kind of a good idea, but at the end of the day, we didn't, and we still have a great lineup and a great starting rotation. And I would love for the people that have been in the Mariners farm system to be the ones playing for the Mariners. As much as I love trades and all that kind of stuff, it's just much nicer to see people that you've been watching, you know, in rookie ball, whatever, come up and start flame throwing in the MLB and start putting down some Astros. Like, that's way more fun to me. So I'm happy we kept him. One person I will say, like, this is going to be wildly overdone, but Bryce Miller is going to be so interesting this year. Everyone was watching him last year. He had an amazing fastball, but he could never get anything done with it because that's pretty much all he had. Like, his other pitches were like very, very minus pitches and just not very good. So he just didn't throw that many off speed. And now he's working with a splitter. So I'm pretty confident in Bryce Miller this year. It's been interesting to see people kind of switch from, they have to be compared because they came up at the same time, but Brian Wu versus Bryce Miller. I think a lot of people were high on Brian Wu over Bryce Miller, but now with the splitter, it seems like that's changed. People are like, I don't know, Bryce Miller, like, he's going to be good this year, and he still ate 130 innings last year, despite being called up late, so...
By the way, 130 innings is more than Tyler Glasnow has ever pitched in his MLB career. So,
yeah, just, in your just rookie season.
Stat, yeah, take that stat to the bank that Bryce Miller is, you know, maybe not as decorated as Tyler Glasnow, but
yep.
He is already more productive as an innings eater. But yeah. I'm totally on board. I think that there was a lot of talk last year of, hey, Bryce Miller may look flashy, but Brian Wu's the guy. And I kind of rejected that notion just because, like, yes, it felt like Brian Wu was the more complete pitcher at the moment.
100%.
But genuinely, you could see the potential that Bryce Miller had if he put another pitch in his repertoire and if he put one or two more plus pitches on top of his fastball. And it looks like he added a splitter, which is going to be something that he uses a bunch. He has a decent curveball that I think he can get over and fool people with. And, you know, he's been playing with a changeup too. So if he genuinely has that splitter fastball combo with a change curveball secondary pitch, like, I really think that we're looking at a guy who is a top end rotation guy. And I think Brian Wu is up there too, but we kind of saw all the bullets that Brian Wu has, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, what you saw last year is what Brian Wu's going to be, and that's going to be really good, but it's not like Brian Wu's going to get two or three more ticks on a fastball. He's not going to get, you know, an even better slider. His slider is dominant. He can locate, and he has great mechanics, and he's super sound, and he's going to be a rock for the Mariners for a long time. But I think that Bryce Miller's ceiling is just, like, too electric to ignore. That's kind of where I'm at.
I think that's totally fair. And just so people don't get us wrong here, like, Brian Wu as your fifth man is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, he'd probably be a two or three starter anywhere. Yeah.
And
let's just put it this way. He would be the St. Louis Cardinals opening day starter. I saw that they just announced Mikolas as their starter, and I'm just, or their opening day starter, and I just had a light chuckle to myself because I had him in fantasy baseball last year, and he was just like one of those guys that I picked up from free agency every 5 days. And so, yeah, hilarious. But I can probably name a handful of teams. There's probably two teams in the AOS that he would be top 2-3 starter on. So yeah.
And to be honest, yeah. I still do think this year it's going to be really tight. Like, last year was pretty tight. I think it's going to be tight again this year between Brian Wu and Bryce Miller. I know we probably shouldn't compare the two, but fuck it, I'm going to anyways because it's just more fun. Like, I'd rather do that than nothing else. So it'll be interesting.
I also think that there's a potential here for Logan Gilbert to be underrated. in 2024.
Dude, yeah.
I think that everybody's so excited about the really young guys that we have on the back end of the rotation in Miller and Wu. They're really excited about George Kirby, and Luis Castillo is just kind of our rock, right? So it's one of those things where Gilbert gets lost in the shuffle. Like, and he may legitimately have like a sub 3.5, 3.3 ERA, and people go, wait a second, what? Like,
yeah,
he's doing what? Like,
by the way,
I only care about this like George Kirby kid. I only care about this Luis Castillo guy who's making an all-star game. So look out for Logan Gilbert to like make a lot of noise, especially 100%. With some of the pitches that he's enhanced over the offseason, specifically a splitter. He was using a splitter and a two-seamer in the last spring training game and had 6 strikeouts in 5 innings, and he just looked absolutely disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could see how underrated Logan Gilbert was by the mock trades the Red Sox fans were making this offseason. By the way, if you are a Red Sox fan
started.
That is listening to this podcast, your fan base sucks cock, and you guys don't know ball. Just by the way,
dude,
your fan base straight up is delusional as hell. That was crazy.
I still am so like flabbergasted at some of the posts that Red Sox fans have about Bello and how if he was a Mariner, he would be a top 5 like starter in the American League. If Bello only was wearing a Mariners uniform, everybody wouldn't shut up about him. Dude, Bello is fucking mid. Like he may be like great one day. Bello is not good. Like, or he is good. He is not like what everybody thinks he is now.
He got a fat contract. Talking about his potential instead of 100%. Like what he is currently.
Also, all of those Red Sox fans that are excited about Bello being extended, I hope you go and look at his contract and just realize that they bought out all of his arbitration years and didn't extend him any years. They literally extended him 0 years. So they did right by him. They paid him a little bit early, but do not mistake getting extended for just buying out arbitration years. They basically just avoided arbitration for the next 5 years. But yeah, I feel like Bello's taking like some pretty significant ricochet shots for Red Sox fans just being like wholly delusional. But the amount of comparisons we get for Bello and Kirby are absurd. And the way Kirby just absolutely clears Bello is so insane. So yeah, all those Red Sox fans in our mentions saying Bello would be our number 2 starter and potentially our opening day starter, kick rocks. Like, respectfully, respectfully,
love
like,
the heat,
kick rocks.
Love the passion, but no,
don't know like, ball, don't know ball no. at all.
To kind of round this out a little bit, what are your thoughts on how the Mariners and the season this year? Is the over under around 86.5 wins or something like that?
Yeah. So over under is 86 wins. I'm going to probably, we'll say 86.5 just to either land at 86 in win or not. But I'm going to go over on their win total, but I think that they're going to land at like 88 wins. And I'm going to call my shot that they're going to be second in the division. I think that I can't tell you who yet. I think it's going to be the Astros if I had to guess, but either the Astros or the Rangers, I feel like, are going to do something just gross in 2024 where nobody really sees it coming and all of a sudden they rattle off 98, 99, 100 wins. Mm-hmm. And we're all like, damn, we were just trying to get hit the over for 86 wins. So, I think that one of those teams will hit that again. I think it's going to be the Astros, but it could very well be the Rangers. They might just run it back again. But I think either one of them also has the potential to win only like 84, 85 games, and the Mariners clear them. So I can totally see us being second in the division, although we're slated for third, which makes sense. Like, if you're looking at it from a 10,000 foot view, defending champions, the Astros, then the Mariners. Then you've got two cellar dwellers that are going to be hanging out at the bottom of the AOS that aren't going to be even close. And one of them in Oakland should not even be mentioned at all. Like, throughout the season, like,
I don't feel good about talking about the A's, to be honest.
I feel so bad for their fans, and they've just,
dude,
it's almost like, it literally is like so much worse than the Sonics getting taken away to Oklahoma City because it's like a 4-year band-aid that's being ripped instead of a 1-year like night and day.
I was thinking the same thing. Like
it genuinely is like Chris Hansen, right? No, is that the right guy?
That's the pedo hunter. That's a different dude for sure. You're not thinking of the right one.
Hansen. His last name's Hansen. I know.
Who are you? You're not thinking of the owner or anything like that, right?
Dude, I'm 100%.
Because that's gonna be Fisher.
I'm just thinking of. Yeah, it is Chris Hansen. Okay, I feel so much better about this.
No way.
There's an investor. This makes me feel so much better. At first, I was like, "Oh my god, what was that in my brain? Like that's so fucked up." Dude, so Chris Hansen, he's a hedge fund manager. He's an investor in Seattle. Mm-hmm. I feel vindicated now. But he basically is trying to get the Sonics back in Seattle. I thought he was the one that took them, but he's the one that's trying to get the Sonics back. And mm-hmm. so he's the one that like bid for the private arena, bright being in Soto and things like that. But the Oklahoma City Thunder owner who bought Sonics, the A's are going through a situation where they basically would have told the city of Seattle, hey, we want to play a key arena for 2 more years, but we're most definitely going to build our own arena in Oklahoma City, and it's going to take about 4 years. After 2 years, we're going to play in some random city that we still haven't decided on, and then we're going to play in another random city if we can't renew that contract, and then by 2027, we're going to finally play basketball in Oklahoma City. Like, that to me would be such a slap in the face as a Sonics fan, more than even just getting the band-aid ripped from, you know, like one season to the next, especially because they did it after the draft and people still show pictures of Russell Westbrook in a Sonics jersey, which is just like the grossest thing I could think of.
I don't think you would see this if there was a salary floor in the MLB. If the A's organization had to pay out $100 million minimum per year for the players, and you saw fans boycott because there's a 4-year band-aid not getting ripped, and they're just like, hey guys, we're leaving, but you know, keep coming to the games. Like, you would see the owners just go bankrupt straight up. Like,
yeah,
you wouldn't see it.
I've talked about a salary floor so much. I don't know if you can enforce it. I don't know if it's like illegal.
No, dude, the owners would never go for it.
But like, if you look at the NFL is very competitive because the owners are very strict about like owners really investing in their team and investing in stadiums, and like you don't see a team literally go under the salary by $200 million. You know, there's ways around it. I mean, look at Mahomes' contract. He turns his yearly salary into a bonus every single year to give them more salary space. It's absurd, and it makes me think that the salary cap actually doesn't exist. So I think that the A's, what they're doing is making just an absolute mockery of the MLB. And
so gross. Fisher
should be like arrested immediately. Just at least jail time. So yeah, we'll see what ends up happening, but them basically shopping themselves to Salt Lake City, Sacramento, these cities before they move to Vegas in 2027 is just, it's so frustrating to watch. And I'm not even an A's fan. I can't imagine an A's fan getting article after article seeing like, yo, where's the team going to move to? Because they decided on Vegas, but like the Vegas, how weird was it when the Vegas mayor came out and was like, I hope the A's stay in Oakland. That was strange
so
as hell.
Funny.
Like,
so
dude,
funny.
Even like, are they not on the same page? Like, they've bought
Who knows,
the land.
Dude?
Like, I'm confused how this is going now. Like, is the mayor just super uninformed? Like, what's going on?
Dude,
there?
Yeah,
like,
I have no idea.
I don't know. All of the above, but what a shit show. Just complete and utter shit show. But 86.5 wins over under. I'm going to go with the over. I really do think we're probably going to end up in the second spot in the AL West for a playoff berth. I think 88 wins is going to win us a wild card berth and get in. Thoughts on over under of 86.5 wins?
Yeah, to be honest, I think it's almost insultingly low. 86.5 just doesn't seem right to me. At the same time, if a few players get hurt, it's over. Like, it's 86 and a half or less for sure. But I'm pretty hopeful for this year. I don't see anything crazy happening. Haniger is someone who's made of glass, but he doesn't have reoccurring injuries like most people think. Like, he just kind of gets unlucky. So, and I'm hoping for a bounce back year from Haniger, and I think we will see it. He's one of the big pieces for that. I'm actually big on the Mariners, especially their rotation, but their lineup is so solid. I'm going 91. I'm actually going pretty high. But
I love that. I think 91 is a good number. I think that 91 also could potentially win us the AL West, barring like a three-team chaos.
I think we lose the AL West with 91. The Mariners just can't win it straight up. Like, there, something is always in the way, whether it's the Mariners getting in their own way, which was last year, by the way, or it's like some crazy super team comes out of nowhere. Corey Seager is like God's gift to earth, or Jose Altuve is hitting like 40 bombs. Like, just some random thing could happen like that. So,
yeah,
I think 91 wins, wild card spot.
Like that. No, that puts us in a good position. Do you want to call your shot? Any predictions on World Series winners that you can name in March? That if you couldn't pick the Mariners, who is going to win the 2020 Major League World Series?
Oh, boy. That is actually so
tough. I actually will go first if it's tough for you, because I don't think this is tough at all. I think the Dodgers are going to win like 140 games this year and win the World Series in four games. So in all seriousness, I think
63 games, who knows.
I genuinely think the Dodgers are, if they weren't favorites, they should be absolutely ashamed of themselves with how much they spent this offseason, and they have essentially nobody competing salary wise with them. So my pick's the Dodgers. I wanted to beat you to that. Hopefully maybe you're coming around to it, but any others that you can see winning the World Series?
You know, baseball's a funny thing. I'm going away from the Dodgers, and I'm saying the Giants win it this year. It's year. The Giants are coming for it.
Well, one thing we didn't talk about, and we had it on our docket, was the Snell signing to the Giants. Snell, everybody knows, signed with the Giants, 2 years, $62 million, $31 million AAV, 1 year opt out, so he can go somewhere else after a year. I just can't believe how agents and players are getting away with those contracts, honestly. How player friendly those 1 year opt outs are, it's pretty absurd. But I'm happy for the players. Like, I'm not mad at the players. I think the players should get all the money possible. The billionaires are literally paying you. But like, how that has ever come about and stayed as like a leverage point for players. Chapman did the same thing. So do the Giants literally have two players that are on fat yearly salaries with a 1 year opt out? It's a funny way to run your team, because you have no idea if they're going to re-sign next year. And if they do,
the way they're doing it is, in my opinion, pretty smart. And I think it actually bucks the players more than
please.
You think, just because I think what we were saying for a long time is like, okay, I'm going to be good for 4 years, but I want an 8 year contract. So I'm going to get an 8 year contract. I'm going to be good for four. You're going to eat the other four. We'll go 8 years, $200 million or something like that. When you get a Snell like contract, you're still getting his best years, but you're not getting him for eight. You're on the hook for only two. So they're kind of eating a lot of the upfront cost. And of course that doesn't feel good at the time, but like a year or two from now, you're clean. You're getting away scot-free. There's no crazy trade that you have to make with a few prospects to salary dump him. Like, it's over. You got a few of his best years and you're good to go. And honestly,
you know,
I think that's
actually
what Snell wanted.
You know who actually started this trend is LeBron James. I don't know if you guys the opt out contracts are like a LeBron James special. I remember when he signed with Cleveland, he signed a 2 year deal with 1 year opt out, and he was making like $40 million a year. Then re-signed that second year, ran it back with Kyrie. After that second year, went and signed a 2 year contract with LA with a 1 year opt out. And he basically, what he does is after a year, He just renegotiates the second year on that contract. And so there's never been a player like LeBron that has that much leverage and is just that good at the sport, besides, of course, like Michael Jordan and whatever. But like in the year in the 2020s and having this high of salaries and whatever, like it is pretty crazy. I think that for me, I actually appreciate that standpoint. I think that, you know, the player is getting shafted a bit on 4 years of potential salary rather than getting 2 years of salary, you know, not getting paid 150 mil, but instead of getting paid 62 over two.
Yeah.
And then who knows, like Snell, who knows what happens in the next 2 years of Snell? Like that might be his biggest contract ever and his highest earning years. And instead of making, you know, that 150 over four, he's only going to make a 62 mil. And of course, Snell has had a decently long career, so it's not like Snell is going to be doing bad by any means. But like, it'll be interesting to see if that's the norm going forward. Like, are the Mariners going to be? It feels like the Mariners have not wanted to participate in this kind of contract so far. So it'll be interesting to see if we throw our hat in the ring as an organization for 2 year, 3 year deals with opt outs after 1 and 2 years. I think the bad thing for like. The very obvious pain point for the team here is they underperform in year one and clearly re-signed their contract in year two.
And you're just like, oh,
holy shit. Like this is, we don't want
this
guy.
What did
we
do?
And then you do like a Robbie Ray pivot and you're like, please just take all the salary.
I still think that's so much better than like, we signed him to an 8 year. We are.
Yeah, no, you're totally, dude, you're totally right. Like how many contracts have teams looked at after the first year and gone, oh my God, like this
Chris
is,
Davis comes to mind with that.
Richie Sexton, like for the Mariners, like there's been some of those. I'm sure. I'm not sure if we thought that about Robinson Cano, but like, I'm sure after year four, we were like, yeah, what are we doing here? So like there's instances that are less egregious, but you know, I don't know if after year one of a 7 year contract, anybody's ever been like, this is terrible for us. One of the more interesting baseball contract things is because of the guaranteed salaries. We talked about Steven Strasburg before the spring training started. He signed that big like 6 year, $200 million deal, and he retired after year three. I thought that you just forfeit the rest of your contract, right? Like obviously you're not playing. The team's not going to pay you. Dude, the team is on the hook for all six of those years and all of that contract.
Was that all guaranteed or like, I'm confused.
So there was a story written, which I thought was fascinating, that because he's technically on contract and the Nationals were trying to do some things, shady things to like void the rest of his contract. Usually what the team does apparently, and I did this through research, learned this through research, is they'll go to a player and be like, okay, what's your number? Like, you have $100 million left on your contract. We'll pay you 60 right now if you just forfeit the other 40. We'll pay you 75 right now if you forfeit the other 25. Like, let's talk. If you want your money right now, we'll give it to you. Let's not wait 3 years. But apparently, Steven Strasburg did not accept any buyout or negotiation. So they literally made him go to spring training this year and, like, help the Nationals with their pitchers. Because if he didn't show up, he'd be like in breach of his contract for not showing up to spring training.
Dude,
how petty is that, dude? How crazy?
That's not petty at all. If I'm paying you, you're showing up. Are you serious? Fucking bum. Get your ass over here. You're a pitching coach now. Dude, are you kidding me?
Welcome to your new career, dude. Like, also,
holy
you're gonna travel with the team. Like, yeah.
we'll need you to throw lefty, you'll throw lefty.
We'll see your ass on the plane 81 days out of the year, dude. Like, we'll...
That's so funny.
Dude, that's so... crazy, though. I had never
heard about that.
I just genuinely thought that, like, if you retire 3 years into a four-year contract, your fourth year, you just forfeit, you know?
But the rest is void, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, but obviously guaranteed contracts are guaranteed contracts, so I guess I get the player sentiment too, especially if it's a baseball related injury. It's not like Steven Strasburg is like willingly wanting to just shut it down at his age.
He just doesn't want to F himself up any more than he already has.
He hasn't pitched since 2021, and his shoulder is broken. Like, it's just, like, done. So, also, he won them a World Series, so.
Yeah, they won the World Series. The dude was throwing, like, harder than any human or any starting pitcher has ever thrown.
They had him on 3 days rest. I can see why they would be frustrated with him, though, because remember how much he was babied when he was coming up? Like, the Nats made the playoffs, and they, like, shut him down. Everybody's like, I do. What? make him pitch. Like, go win a World Series. They're like, nope, we're saving him. And, I mean, eventually they won the World Series, but, like, that's when they had Harper, too. I can imagine Bryce Harper's like, dude, get this guy off the bench and make him throw.
What years were – was that like 17, 18?
It was his first year in the big leagues. So they were putting him on a pseudo.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, they were putting him on like a pseudo pitch limit, essentially. And when he hit that, even though they made the playoffs, they were like, nope, we're going to honor shutting him down. So
I miss that drama, actually. I really do miss like the Bryce Harper, Steven Strasburg era when they were coming up.
Jonathan Papelbon. Him and Papelbon getting in a fight in the dugout.
Dude,
so sick. I missed those days too.
That was good TV, honestly.
Dude, how about Harper signing a contract with the Phillies the same exact year the Nationals won a World Series? That must be so painful. Like literally the same exact year you signed with another team, the team you got drafted by and then left wins a World Series. Oof.
Yeah, that's tough. That is tough.
That's one that's going to sting. Ugh. I can imagine he didn't love that.
I mean, sting in his yacht, but yeah, sure. Like yeah. 100%.
It's a March Madness week. Do you want to throw out an upset, throw out a national champion? Anything you got in your bag?
I'm going to be honest. I haven't cared about March Madness in like the last 7 years. We'll go Cougs. Let it ride.
I'm going to be honest. I think the Cougs are going to get upset in the first round.
Dude, they're going to get shit on probably.
Yeah.
If I know anything about the Cougs, they always.
Dude, one, I'm not going to turn this into a Boise State podcast, but although I'd like to spend the next 12 minutes talking about it.
Of course.
But Boise State was projected as 7 seed. They got a 10 seed, and now they're playing in the play-in game tomorrow to get to the big dance. I was livid this weekend. I was like, wait a minute. And then you've got like Michigan State as like a 9 seed, who's a bunch of absolute bums. But Tom Izzo is their coach, so it makes them like all of a sudden a 9 seed. I was so mad.
Go off, dude.
The Mountain West had six teams make the tournament. That means the league was good as hell.
Yeah.
And still, Boise State was like third in the league, 10 seed, play-in game, playing Colorado tomorrow, probably going to get bounced.
Dude.
So stupid. Yeah. Terrible. I'm still hot. It's Tuesday, and I'm still hot from Selection Sunday. all right. Anything else? I guess last thing here. Dude, we got we have our first stream of the year, opening day stream next Thursday. Yep. Opening day, Bello, Castillo. We talked a lot of mess about Bello today, so I'm sure that Red Sox fans, please come and watch along with us. But yeah, you and I are going to be watching from first pitch to final frame. We're going to be watching the game with you guys. So
yeah,
jump in on Twitter or YouTube. Those are the two places we're going to stream all year long. Probably going to do a stream every other week, maybe once a month. But those live watch alongs, we're going to do instant reactions. So, going to be a lot of fun, but excited. Anything you got, Mitch, for us?
It's going to be fun, dude. I'm looking forward to a good season. 9 days away from, you know, first Mariners game. So I'm pumped.
Yeah, we made it. We made it. We are finally to baseball season. So
yes, hell
yeah, dude. Simply Seattle. Shout out Simply Seattle. Go get 15% off at simplyseattle.com using code TRUE15. Simply Seattle, I'm getting a package here in the next week. So you know, that's going to be lit. I'm going to be ready for baseball 100%. Season. Fired up. So, all right. Make sure to like, subscribe. Help us with the YouTube channel. We are just firing that up. So excited to meet everybody where they're at. But appreciate you guys, and we'll see you next time.